Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, here it is, the 23rd day of December 2013. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the chat room. That's where you'll find the listen live stream. That's where you'll find, yes, indeed, the PayPal button and the traditional mail address if you wish to help keep this effort afloat. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's 2 days before, well, less than 2 days before Christmas. It's Christmas comes Wednesday. Of course, a program note. No program on Christmas. Ferg and I will be traveling that day. We will be going over to see Agnes and Margie and Doodle and Laura and Alex and the babies and spending Christmas with them over there. But there will be programs on Thursday the 26th. Well, wait a minute. All right. Back up. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the 26th and the 27th. We're waiting for I'm waiting for some scheduling stuff to develop. You know, the 26th is Ferg's birthday, and this one is a big one, being it's his 18th. So let's play that one by ear. Probably be gone either the 26th or the 27th. I'm not sure. I just don't know yet. But we're here tonight, we're here tomorrow, and let's make absolutely the best of it. And with that in mind, I want to make sure and announce this early on so folks who want to get involved can have ample opportunity. You may recall that we have begun a little bit of a Christmas tradition here at the Horn. Nor has that mouse in my pocket. Actually, it's Paul from Parts Unknown who has begun a bit of a Christmas tradition here at the Horn, with what we have begun to refer to as his Paulmans. They are a delightful holiday treat. Here's Paul from Parts Unknown's note. To the Horn family, I'm offering some of my delicious almonds up to the family for contributions to the Horn until the end of the week. I have 3 tins of Paulmans, as Bob has dubbed them, trademarked, smiley face. For those who are new to the family, during the holiday season, I spend time making these wonderful, wonderful almonds, and they are. Paul has treated us on a couple of occasions, and these things, I mean, you can't, the tin gets opened and then they're gone. Here's what it boils down to, or blanches down to, as it turns out. I blanch them, Paul from Parts Unknown says, in boiling water and skin them by hand. Then they are roasted in sea salt and extra virgin olive oil. They're healthier than the average holiday food gift, gluten-free and vegan. The ingredients are bought from Costco and Safeway, good union stores, making it a holiday present that Rick Smith would be happy to partake in. They're super yummy, yes they are, and more difficult to eat just one than good potato chips. So please, contribute to the Horn and get yourself a delicious, worthwhile treat. Each of the 3 tins are up for grabs to the first who contribute and donate $40 or more to the Horn. Let Bob know it's for almonds. You know, just in the memo down there, say, you know, for the Paulmans. Send me, bobkincaid@gmail.com, a good mailing address, and I will, in turn, provide it to Paul from Parts Unknown. And lo and behold, you will go to your mailbox, and you're going to find a crunchy, delicious, taste-tempting snack. He makes it sound so simple. But this is a really, really laborious process. And while sea salt and olive oil, the recipe sounds easy enough, it isn't. It's not easy at all. Because then there's the roasting, and you got to get that right. I've burnt almonds. I took a run at this at one point in time while the oven still worked, and it didn't work out well. You've got to pay close. This is really special and really, really delicious. So there are three tins, and they're big tins. There are three tins of almonds for anyone who wants to contribute, $40 or more per tin, and Paul will see to it that you get them. And I don't know, maybe you'll be, who knows, maybe you'll be snacking on them for New Year's Eve. Sound like fun? So here, 2 days before Christmas, it's Paulman time in the Horn family. Then Paul continues. Second, as part of his note, a story. He says, I know this will be off topic, but I moved to a new state for a job last year. It's not off topic. It's the lead topic for this evening. He says, I moved to a new state for a job last year, and I would like to tell my experience in getting my new driver's license. This is important because you need a driver's license, state ID card, to register to vote in this state. Republicans are trying to pass a bunch of legislation making it harder to register to vote, and this happened in Oregon, a fairly progressive state. It took me roughly 5 months to get my license. The first step was to try and get to the DMV when they're open Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Luckily, my job has no real schedule. I can come in early around 6 p.m. and leave at 6 a.m. and leave at 3 p.m., and most people don't have that kind of flexibility in their hours. To get my license, Paul continues, I needed all of the proper ID as listed, original Social Security card, not a copy, official certified copy of my birth certificate, proof of residence, a bill, cable, or power with your name on it, a second picture ID of some sort, driver's license from another state, university student ID card, passport, etc. Then you need to pay the fee. By check or cash only, which is $20 for a state ID or $65 for a driver's license. And for the driver's license, you need to pass a written multiple choice test. Took me 4 times to get my license, Paul continues. Each time I needed to allot 2 to 3 hours because the DMV was crammed with people, and I have to take a number and wait in line at least an hour if I'm lucky. The record was 2.5 hours just to get to the front counter. DMVs are more crowded because some have been shut down permanently in the state of Oregon to save money. So they're even more crowded than usual. The first time, I arranged some time to go down to the DMV. It was closed due to a state furlough day, of which I was unaware. The second time, I took the written test, but to get the time off, I had worked very hard long hours, 4 tens and 6 hours on a Friday, and went down and failed the written test by 1 question as a result of being so tired. The third time, I passed the written test, but my birth certificate was a Xerox copy and not an official copy, and could not be used to get my license, because after all, we have to remember that Al-Qaeda has lots of Xeroxed birth certificates with which they can sneak into the country and reduce your local Wally World to the heap of smoking rubble. That's me, not Paul. Then I needed to pay a $36 fee to the state of Washington and wait 4 to 6 weeks for the birth certificate to come in the mail. The fourth time, I showed up the right paperwork and finally got to pay the $65 for my license fee. All told, 9+ hours at the DMV and $101. Now, this was a bit of a hassle. And this brings us to the overall thrust of what Paul is getting at. This was the overall hassle. A bit of a hassle, but not impossible for me. But with all the hours spent in the DMV, I began thinking, what if you had a normal 9-to-5 job like working retail or in an auto body shop, where time off is lost money out of the paycheck, and that is if your boss is kind enough to let you take the time off? What if the person is living paycheck to paycheck and can't afford the fees? It may just not be worth it or not possible for a lot of people, especially if they're poor or blue-collar workers that work 9 to 5. And this is in a state with no voter ID laws yet. If you were to pile Republican legislation on top of all this, it would turn a lot of people away. This experience scared me how effective these new laws could be at suppressing the vote. Because paying $20 extra doesn't sound like too big a deal to register to vote. But the effort it takes does. And I'll add editorially that $20 extra cannot be conceived as anything but a poll tax. And those are illegal, unconstitutional, undemocratic. Yeah. But Paul signs off saying, "Happy holidays, Paul, from parts unknown." And this is the kind of, and it's born of paranoia. You have a lot of people out there that think the wrong people are doing the voting thing. But they will hide behind the skirts of national security in order to do their vote suppressing magic. And these the scenario that Paul brings to light is very real. I mean, hell, I went over to get my driver's license renewed one day and lost a program. I was into the DMV at Beckley at 2 p.m. and home at, and granted, it's about 80 miles round trip, but I was home by 7? That was a 5-hour affair. Yeah, it's a real pain. And nobody's ever asked me for ID to vote, but I have no doubt that that day's coming, because I'm probably one of those wrong kind of voters, too. You know, liberal. But actually, Paul's note provides a nice segue into tonight's first nominee, because, see, I didn't forget. It may be the night before Christmas. Oh, wait, this just in. Texas Betsy with a note. Our Cassie had her ID challenged when she tried to vote in New Jersey last year, 2012. See how it works? Yeah, those students, you know, they vote funny. Sheesh. But there was no story that came along of Cassie getting arrested, so good for her. Yeah, that's the thing. Cassie's college address is her permanent address, but Chris Christie can't have people like Cassie voting in New Jersey because they might not understand that we've got to fire up a little bit more heat under the pores in order to have the economic miracle that I'm sure Chris Christie is certain he can turn New Jersey into tortured syntax and grammar. But as I said, Paul's account actually serves as a nice segue into this evening's first Moran Monday nominee. Because, like I said, even though it's the night before Christmas, that doesn't stop the Morans. And that means it doesn't stop us from having Moran Monday. Especially since we didn't have Moran Monday last week. I'm not sure if he's out there this evening, but if he is, I know our buddy Ron in Raleigh is well aware of this. Truly a beautiful, nothing beautiful about it, but it's just another day in the suppression of whatever rights the wrong people are wanting to express down there in North Carolina stand. Here's the backstory. You recall Moral Monday? Moral Monday was that series of protests organized by the NAACP in North Carolina stand and attended by vast numbers of people who genuinely and profoundly object to having representative government dismantled and destroyed by the determined denizens of the Republican majority that has finally got not only its front trotters but its back trotters in the trough down in that state. So the NAACP wanted to have another rally. Right-wing Republican Governor Pat McCrory and his Department of Administration said, "We don't want those kind of people here." So, lo and behold, enter stage left, NAACP attorney Scott Holmes, who took the case before Judge Alan Badder, B-A-D-D-O-U-R, on a claim of First Amendment violation. Because, see, when the government does actually say, no, you can't assemble, and arguably if you can't assemble, you can't then speak during the assemblage, then that is, in fact, the government suppressing your free speech, which is an actual violation of civil rights, as opposed to the current kerfuffle and free publicity that is swirling around a certain doofus from West Monroe, Louisiana stand. I should say millionaire doofus. Now bear in mind, if it was truly just an administrative mistake, the administration of right-wing Republican Governor Pat McCrory, who is becoming about as popular as amoebic dysentery in the local drinking fountain, before anybody ever got to court, they could have just said, "Our bad, sorry. Come on down, y'all." But no, they made NAACP attorney Scott Holmes go all the way into the Superior Court of North Carolina in Raleigh and argue his case. Actually argue a case before the court to make sure that the NAACP of North Carolina and people who wanted to associate and assemble with it could express themselves in the form of political speech and gathering at the state capitol, which belongs to the anybody? People of the state of North Carolina. And Special Deputy Attorney General Dawn Tita, showed up with all manner of bogus bullshit arguments. But having listened to the clip, there's a portion that has to be heard to be believed. And I have it right here. The first voice you're going to hear is the lawyer for the North Carolina NAACP, and then the guy who sounds like Foghorn Leghorn is Special Assistant Deputy Attorney General Dawn Tita. He's precious, Dawn Tita is. just a second here. We've got some volunteer work happening in the chat room to make sure that our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, can listen this evening. So he's being patched through to the Horn studio here. He'll be listening on hold. So anyway, just listen a little bit and hear the reasoned, cogent, and I got to give credit where credit's due to Scott Holmes, who did not walk into that courtroom hollering, "Captain, it is I, Ensign Pulver. I put the marbles in your overhead. Now, what's this about no goddamn movie tonight?" But instead presented a cogent and reasonable argument, followed by Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Don Tita, who cannot be said to have done anything even vaguely resembling the same. So here we go. Tonight's first Moran Monday nominee.
And safety and damage to the property are somehow magically evaporate, but it doesn't. It's the number of people. If the reason the permit was denied was because of the number of the people, then that's a bright line rule. But that wasn't the reason. It was because it was a non-governmental organization, and there's a history and a practice of hundreds of people gathering on the state capitol grounds. And so there are paragraph 6 here that says, taken together with paragraph 7, that they limit the activities to the paved area of the South Capitol ground. It's just not true.
It's just not true. Of course not. When the Klan wants to rally at the state capitol, they can march all over the grass, climb the trees, hoot like barn owls, and do as they please. And there's nobody from Repiglicking Governor Pat McCrory's Department of Administration saying, "Goodness gracious, my stars and garters, no." Mm-mm. Y'all need some flagpoles for your heritage flag flying? Mm-hmm, do you? Yeah, all right, we'll be right down. That's how that works. Oh, we want them. Well, see, there's going to be too many of them people down here from the NAACP, and we just want to make sure they stays on the sidewalk, don't you understand? Yeah, understand? Understand, stay on the paved part on the sidewalk. Don't be getting on the grass. Really. They argued, the state of North Carolina argued that it had the right to limit the number of people so that they could keep them on the sidewalk and not on the grass. Mr. Holmes, do continue.
In exhibit 5, I've given you a picture of a Veterans Day event where their folks are sitting in their chairs in the grass.
Yeah, but them's patriotic white people. Them Veterans Day folk sitting in their chairs on the grass. Not like they want to rally against a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian governor like Pat McCrory. No.
The state cannot stand up and say, and with good faith, that hundreds of people are not allowed to gather on the state capitol grounds and stand in the grass.
Okay, this is a visual moment that I have to share with you just because, well, because this is radio, so I'm going to have to use the power of words to describe a picture. When Scott Holmes says, "cannot in good faith," all of a sudden Special Assistant Deputy Attorney General Don Tita leans back all puzzle-gutted in his reclining lawyering chair with his pen up to his mouth as if he wished it were some sort of cigar, and maybe he could take a bite out of it and spit the plug over there at Mr. Holmes. Okay? kind of with his head lolling back like he couldn't even hold it up on his own. Oh, Jesus. I'm not making up these stereotypes. This guy was walking into them.
And our airbag has to be on the paved road and the sidewalks. And so what's really going on here is that the state has preferred speech and non-preferred speech. They prefer government speech over the people's speech. And that's unconstitutional.
The Department of Administration.
Okay, so we have what they call in law school the gravamen of Mr. Holmes's argument, which is pretty well taken, I think. And the voice you're about to hear is that of Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Dawn Teeter. I don't know about you, but I like the day glow. I like the day glow green tennis balls myself because they show up better. They're easier to see. They're bright. And they even make matching duct tape now. So, having said that, here then is Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the state of North Carolina, Stan Dawn Teeter.
And its directors do not care what speech is rendered by an applicant. We don't even...
No, they don't care.
Even ask for it. I don't know how we're supposed to...
They didn't ask for what kind of speech was it going to be. Hell, they knew. I mean, it done said NAACP. It's not like you got an axe. But continue, Special Assistant Attorney General Deputy Dawn Teeter.
Figure it out. All we ask for is how many people you got coming and a few other things.
Yeah, just a few other things. What color are you? And do you plan how you register to vote? And are you going to step on the grass? And why ain't you a Republican? And why do you hate baby Jesus? Just a few other things.
Time, place, and whatnot. It's absolutely clear that the government retains the right to regulate time, place, and manner of speech, if that's what this is.
Now, the judge is off camera, so here comes some questions. Followed by an answer that you will want the duct tape and the tennis ball for.
A permit where it says describe intended usage, provide goals, objectives, or purpose for this permit.
That judge don't sound like a good, God-fearing, upstanding man from North Carolina, Stan. He sounds like he probably went to law school somewhere else. He ain't be talking right. Probably none of them carpetbaggers. Yeah, but you see there where what is that? Tell us, Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Dawn Teeter.
How does that square with what you just told me?
Well, Your Honor, the kind of response we get is exactly what you see here. Hold a paragraph.
You just told me you didn't care and you didn't ask.
We don't, about the content.
What is this?
You see, kind of answers we get is just what we got right here in the exhibit before you. Hold a prayer vigil. They won't come pray for Pat McCrory, good God-fearing, upstanding, right-wing, governating, re-pig-licking man of God, Bible-thumping, Bible-believe. Yeah, come on, have your prayer vigil. Uh-huh. Sadly, it was a bad day for Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Dawn Teeter, because the questions just weren't going the right direction for him.
And so, what's really going on...
Went too far back.
All we ask for is how many people you got coming, and a few other things of time, place, and whatnot. It's absolutely clear that the government retains the right to regulate time, place, and manner of speech, if that's what this is.
On the permit, where it says describe intended usage, provide goals, objectives, or purpose for this permit.
Right.
How does that square with what you just told me?
Well, Your Honor, the kind of response we get is exactly what you see here. Hold a paragraph.
You just told me you didn't care and you didn't ask.
We don't, about the content.
What is this?
We're not asking for the content of what's going to be said. We want to know what they're going to do there. Are they going to roast a goat? Are they going to have a womanless wedding? Are they going to have a prayer vigil? Are they going to have a rally? That's the kind of thing we want to know. We don't care what they say while they do it.
But we don't want no goat roasting, no womanless marriages. This here's North Carolina stand. Daggummit, we believe in Jeebus here. Jeebus and the Republican Party. Well, that and cutting off food stamps and cutting out unemployment compensation and seeing if we can't make it so's a fella gets his leg lopped off in a work accident and ain't nobody got to pay for it but him. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we don't care what they want to do. I mean, except for the goat roasting and womanless marriage part. Oh, my Aunt Irene. Well, Shorty, I'm just glad you're enjoying it. From Shorty at L.A., laughing. You made my side hurt from laughing so hard, because you sound like Foghorn Leghorn. This took me forever to type because I cannot see the keyboard. My eyes are crying from laughing so hard. Dagnabbit! Luckily, I keep my feathers numbered for just such an occasion. Now, dog! Oh, God. How did the judge keep a straight face? They want to roast a goat? I thought North Carolina cherished its heritage of barbecue. Womanless wedding? Because, see, Special Deputy Assistant General Don Trotter ain't going to tolerate no womanless weddings. Now, he might, on the other hand, you know how it goes, he might tolerate if a couple of women's wanted to get married, because that's kind of hot, you know. Oh, Jesus. I mean, I don't. Hey, Doc. Oh, no, Bob. They're not bringing me into this one. This one is entirely beyond me. Womanless weddings? I will smoke on my cigar. Thank you very much. I'll take a pass on this one. No bills. This one's free. Anybody out there who plays in the fields of the law are welcome to chime in on this one. I welcome it, as a matter of fact. Lawyers are notorious, if that is the correct word, for being over-prepared when they go into court. I mean, for instance, counsel for the NAACP, Mr. Scott Holmes, he had color 8x10 glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one showing all them upstanding, patriotic North Carolina stanians sitting there in their lawn chairs on the government grass on the Capitol lawn during Veterans Day. He's ready. And you got to figure that Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Don Trotter had done some preparing, too. My question is how long did it take for him to come up with this response that he gave his honor there, all about how's the state of North Carolina and Department of Administration of good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, repig-licking Governor Pat McCrory, how long did it take him to come up with, we want to know if they're going to roast a goat or have a womanless wedding? Because he can't quite bring himself to say gay marriage. That's what they are now. He's working on a meme is what he's doing. He's working on a meme. Gonna be a woman. When two men get, that's a womanless wedding. Because, you know, if anybody's ever, anybody knows anything about weddings, knows women go plumb wild over a wedding. What kind of wedding could it be without a woman? He ain't done.
Would you treat the permit application differently depending on what they're going to do there, what they're going to talk about?
No.
But you ask for that information?
No, we don't. We ask for what their goals are, what their use is going to be.
And there's all the difference in the world between what their goals are and what the use is going to be and what it is they're going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, if their goal is to overturn the administration of upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, repig-licking Governor Pat McCrory, of course we're going to deny it. Because that's a bad goal, y'ornry. But if they want to come and sing God Bless America and talk about how their Confederate battle flag represents heritage and not hate, well, that's a good goal. Having heritage and not hating, that's a good goal. That's all we're asking about.
Purpose for this permit request. Not. I don't care what they're going to say about what the last legislature put in place or took out of the law. We don't care about that. We want to know what they're going to be doing there. If they're going to be doing something dangerous, if they're going to be doing something that needs fire protection, if they're going to be doing something that needs additional police protection.
No. Now, Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Don Trotter, generally it's the fellas that show up with the sheets and pillowcases that need fire protection because, as we all know, sometimes those cross burnings get a little bit out of hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, we gotta know how many. Do them hippies even use porta potties? We don't know how many to bring in. We're just trying to have good government here, in North Carolina, Stan. That's all.
We want to have enough about what is going to go on, not about what their goals and what their content of their speech is going to be. And who they're trying to influence or what they want to say about
it. They've admitted.
Okay, this is Mr. Holmes again.
In their affidavit, paragraph 9, that functions larger than 100 persons, go to Capitol grounds. Under oath, it's like that. So this argument about letting people see the monuments, letting people have access, keeping it pristine. It's really a pretext to limit speech.
They're saying they're not offering, it's not a permit situation. It's a function of government. It doesn't require a permit.
I would submit that that is an admission of a discriminatory use of a public place and public speech. That it prefers government use of the space over the people's use of the space. It prefers government events over the people's event. That he says a veterans event is not political speech. I disagree. He says having a lighting ceremony with the governor is not a political event. I disagree. And if they can have over 100 people, and you've seen the picture, it's not just the 15 people in our materials to you. It's not just 15 people hanging out. It's hundreds of people in the grassy area that he says they don't allow people in front of the governor less than 2 weeks ago. So the argument is not really about cost. It's about non-governmental groups' access to this area.
I reject the argument.
Oh, goodness me. I fear Special Assistant Deputy Attorney General Don Trotter's done got himself up into a high dudgeon. Because he's rejecting the argument. Testify, Brother Don.
That we are limiting speech at all. These folks have been permitted to go to an appropriate area to speak to their heart's content.
An appropriate area. And that area is not the Capitol grounds. We got them a nice little free speech zone back behind the stockyards beyond the railroad tracks.
but let's check in with His Honor.
And in this case, the court will grant the motion for an emergency temporary restraining order. The issue the court cannot reconcile by other than granting this is the I understand that there are governmental actions that could take place on the Capitol grounds without a permit, and I believe that plaintiffs have established that those have occurred in numbers in excess of 100, or at least a likelihood of success of establishing that, and that the justification for denying the permit in this case is access to the grounds and potential damage to property. Those actions by numbers greater than 100 are no different whether it is a non-permitted governmental function or a permitted non-governmental function. The difference is the speech. The court has is that that is either discretionary or content-based or perhaps runs the risk of arbitrariness. I'm not saying that that's what's occurred here, but the actions that control how the grounds are used and not the speech, then I think the appropriate response by the court today is to grant the motion.
How about that? So the upshot is that the NAACP is going to get to rally on the Capitol grounds as a result of having, at least for the time being, because this is only a temporary injunction against the state of North Carolina from trying to quash the wrong people from saying the wrong things at the wrong time at the wrong place. Who knows? Who knows what will happen on further litigation of the issue? Or God only knows what will happen if it goes up to the Supreme Court of the state of North Carolina, Stan. But it seems pretty obvious that right-wing, pig-licking, upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing Governor Pat McCrory is tired of having those people out there talking about what a lousy member of the human race he and the Republican majority in the North Carolina Stan legislature are. You can see now, I suspect, why it is that Special Deputy Assistant Attorney General Don Trotter and his client, Governor Pat McCrory, God-fearing, upstanding, right-wing, pig-licking, Bible-believing governor, are our nominees, our first nominees, for this here Moran Monday, the 23rd of December, 2013. Our buddy Jay Cruisin with a note, subject line, civil rights. Hey, Bob, thought I'd let you know somebody's paying attention to what we say and do online. I flew up to North Carolina stand today, and oh my God, you wouldn't believe the TSA screening I had to endure. I can't say for sure why, but when they lie to you twice about the reason, one has to wonder. Agent Fred, really? Really, Agent Fred? It's Christmas, for God's sakes. Looks like we have our first tin of Palmans out, so that means there are only two left. Gene, known to you as Anthropogene in the chat room, has claimed the first one. So that means there are two more to go at $40 a piece, so jump right in and... remember, send me a good mailing address so that Paul from Parts Unknown can ship you your holiday Palmans in ample time, perhaps even to enjoy them in the new year. Listen, if you happen to be having some sort of a New Year's gathering and you're having people over and you set those Palmans out on the table, they'll be gone so fast. And people will be looking at you going, where'd you get these? What store did you get these at? I got to go out and get me some tomorrow. That's how good they are. So if you want to claim one of the two remaining tins, just $40 or more contribution, and let me know a good mailing address, and wow. They're yours. I'd say we're off to a pretty good start for Moran Monday. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Moran Monday, I have allegedly, let me check here. Allegedly, I have completed. Nope, still can't find out. My healthcare.gov application. I went all the way through it again, but once again, you get to the last part, you do the electronic signature, and then it just kicks you over to a page with all your information that says you're verified. No continue, no button that says submit, no congratulations, you have persevered until the very end. Welcome, O good and faithful servant. None of that. So I gave up, and I spent 45 minutes on hold and was booted out of the online chat box no less than 6 times trying to get some help because I was at my wit's end. I just couldn't do it again. I like to think that I'm calm and reasonable and rational, but I just couldn't. And so I got some dude on the line after a 45-minute hold time, during which I was repeatedly told how much I matter to healthcare.gov. You know how when it gets real bad and you're on hold and you start talking back to the hold music? Yeah. But he came on the line, and I explained the problem to him, and here's how it works. You explain the problem to him. They ask you for the relevant a couple of pieces of information so that they can get into your application, and then they go through and do the application all over again with you sitting there, periodically saying things like, I thank you for your patience. Please hold on. I've got another page loading. Here's the fun part. When he was done, he congratulated me and said he'd gotten through and said that Agnes and I are approved for subsidies to purchase for-profit insurance, but that our children are eligible for Medicaid. And my first inclination is, so, what? Because there's not enough income happening to meet the 138% of the poverty line that would trigger me and Agnes having to jump into the tender mercies of the for-profit healthcare industry. I ran those numbers before I even got started. So, he said, well, you know, you can... once you get in, you see it, you can appeal. So great, I'm into that. And you know, if you have been listening to this program for any amount of time whatsoever, that we don't do tinfoil hats and paranoia and Alex Jones style conspiracies here. At least not until today. But I am absolutely convinced. Oh, by the way, the application deadline has been extended for one more day so folks can get in and get their application done in time to be covered on January 1st. That was announced early afternoon by an unnamed source inside the Obama administration. But frankly, we don't have the wherewithal to purchase health insurance coverage from the for-profit insurance industry. We're actually the kind of people that this was designed, the Medicaid expansion, to cover. And so, yeah, my paranoia is running at a rapid clip. And I'm convinced that some combination of digital Hessians from the private sector, you know, the people who do everything right because the government can do nothing right, some contingent or whatever of what I like to think of as digital Hessians from the private sector government contracting community, have managed to booger this whole process up because, hell, they didn't want to see this work in the first place. They just wanted the money for screwing it up. Thus, I offer on this Moran Monday a report that I found over at Truthout, which came originally from the Real News Network and Jessica DeVario, titled Private Federal Contractors Cost Taxpayers Twice as Much as Civil Servants. You too can go over to Truthout, and it's a video report. It's 11 minutes and 34 seconds. I'm not just going to rerun that. But Jessica DeVario reports from Baltimore that a recent article in Newsweek revealed that federal government pays twice as much for private domestic contractors compared to civil servants. The article in Newsweek was penned by an old friend of this program, David K. Johnston, who began some many years ago trying to explain to the American people that we were being brutally ripped off. David K. Johnston tells Jessica DeVario that private contractors provided by corporations as opposed to nonprofits cost the federal government on average twice as much as civil servants, and when they're hired by the Defense Department, three times as much as civil servants. That that's just starting place. So if you think about what a balderdash-laden boondoggle... I'm so glad Darlene reminded me of the word boondoggle the other night. You ever do any boondoggling? What a balderdash-laden boondoggle the healthcare.gov site is. By God, no matter how badly the for-profit media wants to, you cannot blame healthcare.gov on the government. No, sir. No, ma'am. That is a bundle of switches that lays conspicuously upon the doorstep of government contractors. People like CGI of Montreal and Waco, Texas. And, of course, Booz Allen Hamilton, who have made a small fortune in fulminating paranoid fantasies to the so-called national security establishment in order to suck more money out of our pockets while our bridges crumble, while our highways revert to their gravel state, while houses burn down. Yeah. While our schools go begging, while the hungry get accused of eating too much food by the Republican Party, while mothers who get goddamn near suicidal listening to their children cry for want in the night. Yeah. Them. Jim with a quick email noting, how well do I know? Contractors a cash cow. Boondoggle a go-go. So once again, and see, this is the beauty. This is the beauty of the government contracting system. The government takes all the blame, you know, especially as long as that one is in our White House. And the contractors laugh all the way to the bank. Anybody seen any numbers? I know Isaac's been following this pretty closely. How much did the healthcare.gov website cost us? Now, take that number and divide it by two or three, and you'll get the idea of what it would have cost had it been built right by people with civil service protection and an actual oath of allegiance to the United States of America, as opposed to a bunch of mercenary pricks whose allegiance is only to the next check the government writes on our behalf. Just a little food for thought on a Moran Monday. Who out there in the for-profit media is really shining a light on who did the actual up-effing of the healthcare.gov website? Because, you know, it was not some civil servant, some GS whatever, in some windowless office with a bare naked light bulb hanging by a thing, by a single cord from the ceiling, sitting there screwing up the website by trying to play Candy Crush at the same time he was building healthcare.gov. It just didn't happen. Where's Laura Logan and her hard-hitting investigative journalism team from CBS News 60 Minutes? Nowhere to be found. How about you, David Gregory? Called anybody in on the carpet for that? Nope. You had both right-wing repig-licking senators from the state of Oklahoma stand on your little weird program yesterday. Bob Schieffer, sorry.
George Snuffleupagus, fur freaking get it. How about you, Wolf Blitzer, over there at Chicken Noodle News, when you're not busy making cutesy promos for Anchorman 2? Or you, Anderson Cooper? No, not you either. And as far as I know, not even the alleged left-wing network has done any real journalism to expose who the true F-ups are who made healthcare.gov a disaster so that the Affordable Care Act could be characterized as a disaster in its own right. And now, if I can ever log into the site, I'm going to find out. I'm going to find a list of just which company's tender mercies Agnes and I have been thrown into. And what a great moment that will be, huh? So we'll take our break now. This is the... That ends the filibobster for this, the 23rd of December, 2013, the night before Christmas. A little reminder, tomorrow night, Ferg will be on hand here in the studio. He's going to bring his git fiddle in, and we'll see what he's noodled up. He'll be nervous as a long-tailed cat in a rocking chair factory. But I suspect he'll do fine. We'll also have him doing the reading tomorrow night. Margie's not here. Doodle's not here. Laura's not here. So Ferg gets the entire spotlight to himself tomorrow. Me, I'm kind of a Christmas traditionalist. And some of my favorite Christmas music, Nat King Cole, Johnny Mathis. It's what I heard. You know, Christmas is a place that is not just a time of year, and it's certainly not just about the birth of the baby Jeebus. By virtue of its long standing, it affords us an opportunity to go places in memory that are more reinforced than usual. Because you can, maybe you can remember a particular day, date that happened once, but it takes a festival type occasion that happens year after year after year to become a sort of pastiche of memories. And so part of my pastiche is a memory of an old, not that old at the time, blue and white hi-fi record player before stereo, and the old Columbia record label, CBS Columbia. And the Christmas tree that sat in front of the picture window. And the ornaments that we would make. Some that were bought. And that were added to over the years. I love the Christmas tree in particular because it's a delightfully pagan portion of the holiday. There were no Christmas trees in the earliest churches. Lord knows, starting about 1647,
The Puritans in England tried to wipe out any vestige of Christmas whatsoever because they noted that it was popish. And they carried that bigotry with them to the New World. So, yeah, a classic from Nat King Cole. This is the horn.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir. Folks dressed up like Eskimos.
Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright.
Okay, I love Natalie Cole and everything, but I'm a purist.
This is Christmas time. Beautiful time of the year to celebrate a lot of wonderful, joyous, happy moments together with families and friends. And I'd like to say to all of you, everywhere, that I hope you have a most happy, pleasant, and beautiful Christmas.
Yeah, that's the one.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow, we'll find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. From 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
I Oh, man. You hear those just little intermittent phrases from that gorgeous little, that gorgeous hollow body electric guitar. Woof. And of course, Mel Torme wrote that song, so it's kind of, I guess it can't help but be, that's the epitome of Christmas cool, isn't it? This is The Horn, Head On Radio Network for this night before the night before Christmas. I'm Bob Kincaid, and the Paulmans are gone. If you wanted them, well, you just got in a tad too late. A gift will be going out to Juanita, our dear friend Juanita in Florida, courtesy of an anonymous gift giver, a secret Santa, if you will. And Mark's going to get a 10, and Gene will get a 10. And next year, well, maybe your chance. Y'all enjoy the Paulmans. I know you will. Yeah, Jim, you're absolutely right. A wonderful song sung by a wonderful man. Read up on Nat King Cole sometime. Heck of a human being. The line to get in on the conversation, this being conversation radio and all, is 304-658-3333. If you want to jump in via Skype, you can do that too. The Skype contact is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And you'll get right through. Let's go to the lines right now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeremy, what's happening?
I don't know if you heard the joyous news about A&E. They've decided to drop their suspension of good old Phil because people spoke up about it. It was a terrible thing.
Oh no! I've been desperately trying to avoid mention of that cretin, not sure which, all day long. But I'm not surprised because the whole thing was a P.T. Barnum trip to the egress anyway. Because the show was on hiatus. Let's just go through this real quick. Once I saw this thing developing, I realized that this had been cooking for a while, and I'm sure that it was actually cooked up between A&E and the Duck Doofy. Because a couple of months back, it was announced that they were in contract negotiations for contract renewal, and there was this non-troversy, this phony baloney fake controversy ginned up about how some people had complained about the prayer at the end of the show. And Phil had said, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we will not do the show without the prayer at the end. And A&E said, well, okay. And the negotiations have been going on all along. That thing didn't get enough traction, so they had to gin this one up. And so everybody who's talked about this damn thing, whether it's me or anybody else behind a microphone or in front of a camera, has been made an absolute fool of. And, you know, I'll wear it. I'll own it. You know, Kennedy said success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. Well, I'm at least one of the daddies of the failure. Now, the guy's an asshole. I wouldn't piss on him to put out a fire, but the fact of the matter is we all got, what did our buddy Reverbo used to say? Well chumped.
We did. But that being said, I've made a pledge to myself. I won't watch the thing on A&E ever again. I don't care who it is. The Bible stuff, whatever. You can think what you want on the Bible, make it up. You can even spout it up. That doesn't bother me as much because I don't believe in the shit. But what really pissed me off was the fact that he had the balls come out and say that during Jim Crow when he was growing up, he picked cotton with African Americans, and none of them were sad.
Yeah, that's and that's the overlooked part of all of this, Jeremy. Oh, see, here we go. And Dr. John pointed this out to me over the weekend. I think it was a story in The Atlantic that noted that this whole thing was being missed because in the midst of the of all of his homophobic bigotry, It was just the fact that he declared himself a yearner for the good old days of Jim Crow just sort of got blown by.
Yeah, I mean, the old saying, the old Negro spiritual, that wasn't happy fucking singing. Just like you said the other night, people in the chain gang aren't singing because they're happy.
No. No.
It's mind-numbingly stupid and horrendous that he could say this and it could blow past that, only say that he could start off about the Bible. Again, that doesn't bother me. This part does.
Well, there are economics to consider, too.
Right.
Because I think A&E probably realized that they had a better chance of getting gay folks to tune in just out of a sense of shock and horror just to see what all the furor was about. So that's, you know, that's where the focus went. I mean, can we stop, now see, we're doing it. Dadgummit, Jeremy, we're doing it. But did anybody stop to ask why it was that anybody would want to interview Duck Doofus for GQ magazine? I mean, magazine interviews and articles don't just happen. They are planned. They are plotted. Magazines come out a couple of, what, December comes out in November, November comes out in October, and that means that they have to be on the editorial board by, what, 3 months before?
I'd say, yeah, this was penned long before it came out.
Oh, we are such chumps. But, well, we don't have cable here right now. But if we ever do again, it won't be stopping on A&E for anything.
I mean, A&E has essentially become Duck Dynasty in the first 48, which is just basically white people running around saying how bad inner-city ghettos are and black people are killing each other. That's all that is nowadays. It's kind of grotesque in its own way.
I love that, Duck Dynasty in the first 48. It's good.
That's what the first 48 is, essentially, to me. It's just, oh, my God, look at these people. Look what they do. And it doesn't... You hardly ever see a white person on the first 48, and that's not being racist on my part, but you never do. The white people, the investigators, it's all about what the drug-dealing African-Americans are doing, supposedly.
Yeah. And why, you know... And why, you know, why is that? Okay, so go and guess what the audience is for that program. Hint.
Probably mid-range white people.
Yeah, sure. And who watches Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Chow?
It's all the same people.
Pawn Stars. Pickers.
We live in a fear society. It's fear this, fear them, fear everybody. They're all coming to get you. So that's really all I had to say. But I really wanted to say have a good, whatever you want to call it tomorrow. Wednesday, I mean.
Yeah.
My family will be going to a water park on Christmas Eve and spending Christmas Day in a water park. A little different than we normally do, but it's been a strange year between an animal passing away and just everything came fast this year, so we figured we needed a time out of it. So that's what we'll be doing.
Sounds like a lovely idea.
It's right up on the northern border. It's a resort called Jay Peak. It's probably famous in the Northeast for a lot of people that know what ski is. And it's going to be probably about 85 in that indoor water park. So I'm looking forward to it.
Sounds like fun. But it's an indoor water park?
Yeah, that's what we do in the north. We build our water parks inside a building. It's literally probably the size of 2 football fields. It's got a lazy river. It's got a 60-foot dead drop chute. It's got 4 or 5 different water slides. It's got a wakeboarding thing. Basically, it's just a forceful jet of water that's very thin, but you can wakeboard it with your knees or even boogie board on it. We have 1 or 2 in the area, but that's what the Northeast does. We build these indoor, horrendous, money-costing water parks that places like this.
Well, you know, go and enjoy the time with your family, because that's more than anything, it is about family for those who have them.
Right, and that's basically what we're doing, is to get away and just have time for us and kind of, in a way, snub the holiday in its own way, because It's just, it's so consumer driven now. It's just sickening. It really is. I will admit that I was part of the consumerism on Thursday, being Thanksgiving. I went out and bought a new TV. I did. But I've done that once in my life. Once. I'll never do it again.
Nasty, was it?
It was especially nasty because we wanted to see if the legends about a certain store that starts with an M or with a W and ends with a T, if it was true. And it's 100% true. We were horrified at what we saw in that store. And there's not anything there, but just what people are doing in there, even in Vermont, was just, it's beyond words. Pushing, pulling, hitting you with carts, you know, for a pair of socks, just something stupid.
One, yeah, sure.
And for us,
you know, gone are the days when I would do the great big Christmas feast. This is just about me and Ferg getting to go over to be with our family, and that'll be the joy of it, especially being around the little ones.
That's all it's ever been for me. My family's never been huge on like spoiling. I mean, I know you ask people say I'm spoiled, but I don't see it as spoiled. I mean, compared to other people, I don't feel spoiled, but it's never been about the gift. It's been about people for me to see my family. So that's what we'll be doing, but I will get off here and waste enough time, and I hope you and Ferg have a good day and the rest of the family, too.
Well, I thank you, Jeremy. I thank you very much, and I wish you a very happy holiday time with your family. And okay, we will talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, and just a reminder about the nature of the program, nothing on Wednesday. We'll be here tomorrow, Ferg and I. And then Thursday is his birthday, and either that or Friday we'll probably be away, depending on how he wants to celebrate his birthday. Heck, he may hold out until Saturday. I don't know. But that's how it's going to shake out. Let's keep things rolling. I am told that Bill is patched through Betsy's phone. So let's see if we can make this work. Are you there, Bill?
Back.
Yeah, you there, Bill?
Yeah, I think that's me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's you.
Let me duck here. Yeah, that was me. Somebody just missed. Damn. I said, what's going on?
Ah, you know, just another day in Happy Valley. You'll be glad to know that I got a nice note from your history teacher buddy in my email today, letting me know that he was thinking about you.
Yeah, he's one of my best. You know, here's a guy you're sitting over a bar, over a beer with on a break, you know. And the next thing you know, you're talking about some business other than a bar, you know.
Yeah.
That's so remarkable to be able to do that. And as for me right now, I'm still waiting to see what's going to happen, and it's moving right along, but it takes a while, Bob. There's been a day down here in the last 2 days of one more will be moaning, and you know what the other one is.
Yeah, but don't leave it up to people's imagination.
Yeah, well, people was, for last week we had, last Friday we had to have a good Christmas Eve sound off, musically speaking, you know, with all of the crap songs you ever heard in your life, and, but I always get a kick out of it, and I think it's so American. Have you ever checked the writers of pop religious music in this country?
I knew. Are you talking about so-called contemporary Christian music?
No, oh. All American from the word get-go. Where it came from?
No.
Well, if I take a look at. A great composer. I'm not putting these composers down as composers. They're great. They really knew one end of the egg from the other, so to speak. And they were really, they really said something. Something that was, you know, about families and, no, they simplified it, but they came out and they said it in plain old American English, sometimes in biblical, sometimes in just plain old everyday, hello, how the hell are you, brother? Kind of, you know.
Yeah.
What it was supposed to be, in other words. I really don't understand why, and I got nothing against, what's his name? The funny old Western hero that only wore one gun. Gene Autry.
Yeah.
What kind of an American was he, anyhow? One gun, for crying out loud. Come on, now.
Well, yeah, I mean, then again, if he just waited around long enough, he could have had an AK-47, Bill.
That is true.
The Lieutenant General Kalashnikov, who invented that rifle, that gun that has shed ever so much blood across this planet, died today at the tender age of 94.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he didn't come on the scene till late, did he?
I don't recall offhand exactly when he did invent his rifle, but, man, it beat the stuffing out of ours, didn't it?
Yeah, well, very, very good. And
I mean, you could take an AK-47 and submerge it in the swampy waters of Southeast Asia and pull it out and shoot all day. On the other hand, I've been told, I have no actual experience, that that an M16 would jam at a hard look.
Well, there's something to be said for this Kalashnikov, because when they were very busy in the earliest days of their use, killing people who spoke the same background language that my Germanic people did, and gee whiz, they actually did something of value as opposed to an American weapon. Well, I'll be surprised. Every once in a while, Mother Nature rolls a basketball out in the court, and the thing takes about six different turns and pops into the basket, you know?
Yeah, that one went through without touching the rim.
Sure did. So anyway, but I'm gonna get off of that subject for a while and just hope that my friends and people who become friends and the people who believe me, if I'm gonna knock this one right down the alley. If I consider to be by anybody a certain leadership, it's blind, no pun intended, blind luck. Throw out enough stuff, and the rest of you guys have to stop the job of stopping it and kicking it back at me. In case I get too carried away with my own bullshit, which is if you don't believe that can be done, just check out any commercial for anything from automobile insurance to, you know, car polish. You know, you'll hear
yeah.
some kind of crap or the other, so just buy it off, because there's so many good people. I mean, I miss, I'm learning more and more about my situation will be quickly in order once I settle into a place. But I certainly do miss the overhead, you know.
Yeah.
I miss that. I never thought I'd see the day when I'd miss a television show that much, and a source of television news. And of course, what did the Cleveland Browns do today or yesterday?
Missed it. What did you did what?
No, I missed it too. Because I think they
got
beat, but.
Oh, hold on. I can find out real quick. Let's see. Well, an hour ago, question being asked, How long will Cleveland Browns quarterback Jason Campbell escape criticism for his poor play? And then from the Plain Dealer 20 minutes ago, what went wrong with the Browns in this dismal 4-11 season? Seems, Bill, that they might better ask what went right. Be a shorter list and a shorter article, wouldn't it?
Yeah. People can be hurt so much of the way, and I think it's time for a new coaching staff again. I mean,
yeah, they lost 24-13 to the Jets yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I don't have all the answers, but you know, getting back to the Christmas thing, you were right on the money with that, and especially the thing that I learned from one of our downstate Ohio listeners, that I have to refer to him as Professor Cole, was attacked nastily during a Christmas song by idiotic racists.
Yeah.
Which is something that doesn't get told enough, but should be told over and over again. And before I go any farther, I got to thank all my friends, and locally and otherwise, who have. I guess there's going to be music available on the internet, but that's not up to me to sell it. I already did sell it once, you know.
Yeah.
And I want to pass it along to everybody who contributes to this show that even at a time of peace and place, we must keep speaking and saying those unkind, nasty things that unfortunately are also true. And somebody has to keep bouncing that ball high in the air where it can be seen. And, well, hell, for one, Bob, I used to carry collapsing signs and hang them on the end of my PA system. And guys used to tell me, well, why do you keep announcing blah, blah, blah? I said, because you just tell them the truth once. And if they like it, they buy it. And if they don't like it, they don't buy it. But at least you didn't poison it with any crap on the way out the door, you know? And to everybody involved with this group, and to Betsy tonight in particular, it's just so good to hear a voice connected with Horn, and I appreciate it so much. And if anybody's got something to say to me, say it. Come on. Because I like to hear other people.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But I know everybody's out running around. What do we used to do with the money? I'd take a... what was it you had to do with your... Hone the razor. You had to hone that money to try to get it to go a little farther, you know?
Yeah, it'd be a little easier if it was made out of silly putty, Bill.
Yeah. Now, that's silly. Oh, sorry.
Nah, it's all right. No worries. Yeah, I was just, when you mentioned some of the stuff that Nat King Cole put up with, I went and did a little researching. He bought a house in L.A. Now, for everybody who thinks that racism was a Southern thing, yeah, check your privilege. August 1948, Nat King Cole bought a house in L.A. Bought it from Colonel Harry Gantz. And he bought it in an all-white neighborhood. And in response, the KKK in L.A., it's not like they were trucked in from Mississippi. The KKK... burned a cross on his lawn. And then the Property Owners Association came along and said they didn't want any undesirables moving into their little neighborhood. Bless his heart, Nat King Cole said, well, neither do I. And if I see anybody undesirable coming in here, I'll be the first to complain.
Yeah. Tell it the way it is, man. But I won't keep you, but there's so many... all you ladies and gents out there, and you guys know who you are, and for me personally, thank you very kindly, and thanks for a great year, and let's keep pushing and look on for another one, and that includes stopping the poisonous mountain water.
Yeah.
Because right now, Bob, I'm not a water expert as you are, but what do we say about water? What does it do? What does it move? How does it move?
It seeks its own level.
Yeah. And does it run uphill or down?
No, it runs downhill.
And what's downhill below it?
People.
Yeah. And at that point, I'll let you go.
Well, before you do, I thought I'd just tell you a little story. Ferg and I happened to be out, and we sat down for a quick bite to eat, because, well, the way my life is these days, when my body tells me it's time to eat, there's no, hey, let's go ahead and get home before we do this. You know, you start to shake and sweat, and you know, pretty nasty when one's blood sugar goes to hell. So we sat down to eat, and we sat down next to a couple who were really, really genial. And, hi, how you doing? Oh, we're great. How about you? And at some point in time, the woman said, well, we're getting married next week. And congratulations, of course. And she said, yeah, we've got a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and one on the way, and we've been together for 7 years. We figured we'd just go ahead and get married. And I thought, you know, that's I think a pretty neat commentary on 2013. And it didn't seem like gay marriage or marriage equality had affected their decision to marry. But that's not even the subject of the discussion. What happened is that we went on talking, and these were just really, really nice people. And so it got around to me saying, well, what do you do? And she was like a paralegal. And he said, I work in fracturing. And underneath the table, Ferg kicked me sharply in the ankle. As in, because he was afraid that I was going to say, well, don't you know you're killing people? I didn't do that. I just sat there and listened. And I was absolutely stunned by the level of disconnect, Bill. Because they got two precious children on the ground and one on the way. And he just happily told me about what they do. He said they will go through, I think he said 400,000 pounds of frack sand and chemicals 3 times a day. And his job is to coordinate making sure that the frack sand goes down the hole on time. And I was grateful for the conversation, Bill, because I had never heard what the numbers were like. You hear, oh, they use some sand. 400,000 pounds 3 times a day. 1.2 million pounds of sand. Now, on the other hand, I happen to have recently been out to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where the sand comes from. And I did along the way. I said, man, where's that sand come from? He says, well, it comes in from trains all over, but it comes to us out of Ohio. He had no idea where it was coming from. And I don't know if I could take him, to Auburn, Wisconsin. Would it matter to him that community's being poisoned? I don't know. But I was shocked, not shocked, but just moved coming away from that conversation by the degree to which he was probably uninterested. And yet, if somebody moved an operation in next to him and his 3 beautiful children... You reckon it would matter then, Bill?
Yeah, there might have been some lead flying around there, huh?
Yeah. The blast, because they have to blast to get at the frack sand in Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota, just like they have to blast to get at the coal here in central Appalachia. And it's the poisons that go into the air off of that blasting that make people sick. Far more even than the water.
Yep.
So, I don't know what the answer is.
The question is, it's time for all of us to find out what this stuff does to one another.
Yeah. And the thing is, in trying to find that out, of course, we're up against a stone wall. Kid you not. Because the industry doesn't want to know what they're doing to human beings. So, you know, that's the challenge. Well, I'm looking in the chat room, Bill, and I'm finding out that your genial connection has got to move along in about 10 minutes. So I will say to you a very Merry Christmas, and maybe we'll get to talk tomorrow evening. I don't know.
Let's hope.
And in the meantime,
actually,
you be good.
Tomorrow night may be in a wide open meeting of a bunch of Cleveland once upon a time non-churchgoers, it'll be good food to eat and a lot of BS. But otherwise, I'll be holding down my chair here.
All right, sounds good. And if we get to hook in and talk again, that'll be just dandy by me.
And my same to all of you folks. Believe me. I never thought I'd see the day when I'd speak to so many folks and like them all.
Well, I mean,
anyway,
the list, Bill, is as long as my arm of people who have written in to say, you know, our best thoughts to Bill. So you are much loved.
Pass it right back to him, my friend. I miss them all, and that even includes a few bill collectors. So take it easy.
All right.
Without them, where would we have a good laugh, you know?
Indeed.
Take care of yourself.
All right. And by the way, Jim sent an email saying Happy Christmas Eve to Mr. Stress.
Same to you, Jim. Thank you.
All right. You take care, Bill. Bye now. The one, the only, the inimitable, Mr. Stress, our buddy Bill from Cleveland. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. Thanks everybody for jumping in so quickly on the Palmand offering. I know it'll tickle Paul from parts unknown to know how quickly you got after it. And the thing is, he doesn't just do this for the Horn family. He gives them out as gifts too. And people say things like, you know, you ought to start making these for money and selling them in stores. And the thing is, it's incredibly labor intensive. So when you receive your tin, just know that a whole lot of warmth and goodwill has gone into making that crunchy delight that you will be receiving. So where to go? It's more in Monday, and sometimes I think, just because of the nature of the stuff that finds its way into the program here, that maybe this time of year we should just shut everything down for a week and not be a big holiday bummer. Because some of these stories are bummers. I mean, sure, we had our fun with Special Assistant Deputy Attorney General Don Trotter in North Carolina, Stan, and him wanting them. The wrong elements of personages, people are walking around on the governor's grass down Raleigh. Sure. But I got other stuff here that this time of year, or any time of year, frankly, and would just curl your hair. And may yet. Note here coming in from Rob. Up in Minnesota. Subject line, and I will read the word since it's... The subject line of the email is ACA clusterfuck. Rob writes, for over 10 years, I've been able to opt out of my employer-sponsored health insurance because I am a disabled veteran enrolled in the VA healthcare system. I use the money in my employer health account for medical reimbursement, dental care, glasses, VA drug copay, etc. I just found out on Saturday that the money in my medical reimbursement account, about $4,000, will be used to buy health insurance I don't need or want as per the Affordable Care Act. It will be like flushing money down the toilet because I will continue to use the VA healthcare system and will not be able to use the money for actual health care, like getting my teeth fixed. It's odd that I got a letter from the VA in September stating that as an enrolled veteran, I have met the new requirement to have health care coverage. That's in scare quotes. Since I'm 65 years old and almost totally retired, there's an end in sight for this ACA disaster for me. Good luck on your coverage, Bob. Well, luck is what it may take. Because the reality is, if Agnes and I are thrown onto the tender mercies of the for-profit healthcare industry, we can't afford a premium. Plain and simple, we cannot afford a premium. If we could afford a healthcare premium, we'd have had it before now. Hell, we'd have had God knows what. But we can't afford a health care premium. So I guess there is some luck involved. In this instance, Rob wouldn't be... I'd find some sort of ACLU, somebody. You know, because this shirt, he's got $4,000, it's his money, and the government just going to take it? Sounds like a taking without due process of law to me. Sounds like a violation of civil rights. Does the ACLU still do that? They did a fine job in Raleigh today. Mercy. Ultimately, I'm still in the same place I was. I believe and understand exactly how dangerous that word is. I believe in the concept of universal, single-payer health care, where the minute you're born and assigned a Social Security number, you're covered. Period. Doesn't that sound about a billion times more simple than this boondoggle that has been created solely for the purpose of directing federal monies, welfare, I mean, come on, it is welfare to the for-profit insurance industry? I want... Because I am a member, there's no pretense to this program. I'm not going to sit here and talk like I'm some sort of everyman and go and get on my Gulfstream 5 and fly off to the Dominican Republic to have sex with underage boys like a certain former junkie who claims to have talent on loan from God. There's no Gulfstream 5. There's no Maybach. The driveway is weeds and gravel. The house is less than 1,200 square feet. Three bedrooms, no closets. It's a disaster. And so... That's the reality. And I object. Think about it. I mean, if you just consider what I mentioned a little bit ago about that that news video that I found over at Truthout. If we're spending that much money to provide welfare to the for-profit insurance industry, which has executives who are compensated with a Christmas bonus at the end of the year based on how many people they screwed, imagine how much further that money could go if it was going into a Medicare for all system. About twice as far, I'm guessing. Yeah. So, you know, little slice of reality. And here I sit in West Virginia, which has expanded Medicaid. My heart really aches for people in the Plessy states, the Alabamas, the Georgias, the Tennessees, and Texases, and Louisianas, and Oklahoma, where just by virtue of reaching adulthood, you have a death sentence handed to you. Stay well as long as you can, and if you die, die quickly, preferably cheaply, because that's good for the free market. But here on the 23rd of December 2013, somewhere in this country, several somewheres in this country, are insurance industry CEOs who are opening their year-end bonus checks, and they're saying, hot damn, we're going to have a lovely time in Stad this Christmas. They're already gone. Or maybe they'll have their lovely time singing Christmas in the Caribbean on St. Lucia. You know what I mean? Yeah. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back to your calls, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Gene and Mark, I need mailing addresses, please, so we can get those Pullmans out to you as quickly as humanly possible. It's the night before Christmas, on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Everywhere. We don't live in a hurry.
just kind of inspired by the idea of some sleazy insurance executive out there. Because, you know, insurance bonuses at the end of the year, that's blood money. That money is soaked in human anguish and agony and misery and grim death. But it sure feels nice when it's buying you some sunshine on your pale hide down in Barbados or St. Lucia or St. Kitts or St. Barts or St. somewhere, right? Thanks, for-profit insurance industry. You know, I would absolutely love to hear Senator Sanders stand up on the floor of the Senate and say, I have a simple question for my president. Do you or do you not believe that health care is a right that should be enjoyed by every single citizen of this country? Wouldn't that be nice? Again, I support the idea of everybody being insured. This appears to be private for-profit contracted website appears to be a pretty good indication that that ain't happening. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Jim.
I'm sorry. You were speaking of the Caribbean or whatever, and my Palm Beach Santa just went off by himself.
You know, that it's probably a Christmas miracle.
It is, indeed. Would you like to hear him again?
Absolutely.
Because this is exactly what they're doing.
Merry Christmas!
He even drops his shorts and has a tattoo on his ass.
You can't beat that now, can you?
Not really, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, these people, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, it is blood money when they're taking health care away from people who desperately need it, and they don't. And, of course, you know, their motto is, well, if wishes were horses, beggars would ride. That's just about as close they come to it.
Yeah, and what's the one that involves if butts were nuts?
Oh, we can go on and on about all that stuff. Yeah, you know, it's just not a good situation. It really isn't with the way it is.
I mean, I've come to this conclusion all by myself. I haven't had any right or left wing talking points to help me to this notion that the problem we're experiencing with the rollout is entirely, almost exclusively, the fault of people who put profits before people.
Well, I mean, those contractors and stuff like that. I mean, you know, as you said earlier, a contractor costs three times as much as a civil servant who is dedicated to his job and he's sworn an oath. I mean, I had been through that so many times with contractors. I used to be a COR, a contracting officer's representative, and I saw how they just literally stole. I mean, talk about fraud, waste, and abuse. I mean, those were the key elements of their whole axiomatic way of doing business. Fraud, waste, and abuse. And, you know, the Pentagon, they don't care, because the thing about it is, if they would ever go before Congress and say, we don't need any more money, well, guess what's going to happen?
Right.
They're going to get cut. And so the whole, you know, driving force behind it is to say, we need more and more and more and more and more and more and more.
And a great deal of the creative process gets caught up, Jim, in the act of trying to figure out how to suck up more money. You know, witness the business about the NSA needing a program to spy on people in World of Warcraft.
Well, you know, they are all on to themselves. But, you know, I have basically seen so many situations in which part of your critical element for your performance evaluation was to execute your budget. I mean, that was, you know, as far as your evaluation is concerned, that was to execute your complete budget and need more. And if you didn't, you're in trouble. I can tell you right now. And that was in the civil service and the civil service employees. I mean, that was visited upon them. I mean, that's the way it was. Probably still, it still is now. Because contracting has really become such a racket and stuff like that ever since, you know, 2001, when they had all these people over there just ripping the government off with dirty laundry and expensive laundry and Halliburton and all those people. We talked about all that before, but that's just the way it is, you know. It's, fraud, waste, and abuse. And, you know, this is one thing that really hit me pretty hard. One senator had what he called his list of things that were just absolutely crazy. And the one that hit me the biggest was a $300 million Zeppelin-type balloon that was designed to advertise military programs. And the damn thing only flew once, and they tabled it. But they spent the $300 million. Now, I think it was $300 million. It could have been three, but I swear that it was $300 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's Jed Clampett walking around money.
I mean, to have a modern-day Hindenburg with helium that would go around and be used as an advertising tool for, well, the military. And here again, now they're cutting back on, or going to cut back on pensions for disabled veterans and people who really need it and stuff like that, as well as other people who need it, who have, well, you know, you don't have to be in a war overseas to have to fight a war at home. And the war at home, what I mean is being simply able to survive and make it from one paycheck to the other, or to see whether or not you're going to trade food for medicine and this type of thing. And the extension of unemployment. That's not a good thing. Now, I believe it's like, as of 28 December, 1.8 million people on extended unemployment will have no more checks after that, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty rough, particularly when you're coming into the hardest part of the year, post-Christmas, all the holiday spirit is gone. And those people who have tried to, I guess, extend a little whatever to provide for their family something special for the holidays, it's not going to be there. And I don't think that bill is going to pass. They're not going to add it to it. And I don't know, if I were the president, excuse me, I don't think I'd be in Hawaii right now. I think I'd be at Camp David. I really do. I mean, can you imagine how much it costs for a president, whether it's Bush or whoever, to fly all the way out there? I mean, you know, if the guy would simply say, look, you know, I'm going to stay at Camp David, it's a beautiful place, I don't have to go to Hawaii.
No, there's no getting around the fact that the optics would be great. The optics of him staying at Camp David, just on the odd chance that the Congress would get its thumbs, its collective thumb out of it. Well, no, the Let's be fair. It's not the Congress. It is the Republicans, okay? They're the ones who don't want this unemployment extension.
Mm-hmm.
But the optics would be great on it if he was sitting there saying, you know, here I am. I'm at Camp David. I'm ready to go in a moment's notice if the Republicans will decide that 1.8 million unemployed people deserve the continued help until they can get on their feet. I'm sitting here. I'm ready to go. The optics would be magnificent. And God knows, at 41%, he could use a little bump. But I wonder, Jim, if at this point in his presidency, he has come to the conclusion that if he were photographed saving kittens from a burning tree, the for-profit media would still accuse him of setting fire to the tree.
I don't think so. I think, you know, the longest journey begins with the first step, and I think it's one thing he could say, look, you know, I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to be in Washington, not in Hawaii, and I'm not going to emulate my predecessor by spending half his time down at wherever he did. But nonetheless, I think it will be a very good example. I mean, you know, you talk about...
He's already given the adios, hadn't he? He's gone.
Oh, yeah, he's been gone. He left yesterday or the day before. And, you know, I have always objected, particularly in these times of austerity, him going out for 17 days to Hawaii. I mean, he was supposed to be the president who was supposed to feel and understand and realize the hardships of people and the hardships that people were going through. Well, did he need to set that by example? And unfortunately...
Well, he did it. He did announce that he will be paying his health care premium out of his own pocket.
Oh, wow.
Isaac tweeted that to me earlier today. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick. Just one second. There it is. Yeah, the president will pay his premiums personally, and it will run him about $400 a month.
Well, Bud, when you're making $400K a year, that's not a whole lot. And his wife and both his girls are very healthy. He's healthy, so he's been, you know, he's not facing any catastrophic thing or any, you know, real horrible deductible. Sure, he can do that.
But I guess here's the question. I thought we were already paying for his health care. I mean, Lord knows we bought a new heart for Dick Cheney, didn't we?
Yeah, that's supposed to be. The president's paid, I think, 10 times a year. And basically, that's how they run it. And he is employed and covered by one of the best health care programs in the nation, as our members of Congress.
But remember, and see, this is the fly in the ointment, Jim. Back when this was all being debated in Congress, Charles Grassley, senator from Iowa, I can remember him. His nose was brown from the eyebrows down back during the Iran-Contra hearings. He just couldn't get enough of Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North. He was a hateful little... He was fairly young back then, and he was still hateful. But Charles Grassley inserted an amendment into the Affordable Care Act that said everybody in Congress got to participate in the Affordable Care Act, too. And the Democrats said, he's trying... Okay, he wants to poison the bill? We'll let it in. And they did. So now, yeah, they got to sign up, too. Boehner signed up last week, or the week before.
You mean they're not covered by the federal program?
Yep.
Wow. Well, I'm sure... Let me cut this damn thing off. I'm sorry.
I think he has a will of his own, Jim.
He does, indeed. He's like something else around here, too, but nonetheless...
Probably scares poor Rupert half out of his senses.
No, Rupert loves him. Rupert just sits there and says, what the hell are you doing? But nonetheless...
But that's generally Rupert's response, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just about everything.
Yeah, he's a pretty laid-back cat. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, when they start doing that to themselves, there's something in rotten in the state of Denmark. Don't you believe there's some, they have some additional compensation, which in the long run is not going to cost them one damn cent any more than...
Well, $400 a month is not one damn cent when you're making, you know, what does a just backbencher member of the Senate make, Jim?
I think probably close to that 170.
Yeah, $400 a month is, you know, the same as one of us proles going down to the Rippy Mart for coffee and donuts.
But then you got to look at what kind of program they're offered, because they probably have a zero deductible, and it probably covers everything from A to Z. It is a special kind of program, you know, to which they and they alone are entitled, or they and they alone could you know, afford. And it's just smoke and mirrors. I mean, I'm on the federal health insurance program, and let's see. Mine cost me, I think, around $130 or $140 a month. And the government picks up $600 of that. So, I mean, you know, that's a good thing. I mean, that's one of the reasons I stuck with the job that I had, because I knew that I would need it, and I certainly need it now. But, I mean, you know, that's basically how it works under FEHB. But I'm sure they're going to try, since they are saying, well, look at us and the example we're setting, they're going to try to mess with that too, because the first thing they always go for are, number one, benefits for federal workers in terms of insurance, in terms of retirement. That's when they transition from civil service retirement to the old thrift savings program, which is nothing but a damn KEO or a 401k for those who are, you know, coming after 84. And then, of course, they're going to go after health insurance and stuff like that. They always seem to want to balance the budget on the backs of the federal worker, and at the same time, they're just throwing it out cheek by jowl, all these monies to their contractors, and getting all these kickbacks and stuff like that through covert means, and you know they are. They're all feeding at the trough, or they wouldn't be going back there. They really wouldn't. I'm telling you, I don't have a whole lot of respect for these people in Congress and some of the stuff they do and how they listen to or how they are paid under the table or by covert means, and that's how they can make it semi-legal, I guess. I mean, you know, people like Jack Abramoff and, oh, God, some of those other people up there and how they subsidize campaigns and stuff like that. So they're not losing a damn thing. If anything, they're probably gaining in the long run.
Well, consider this. We just had a note in, Jim, from Diane in Kansas Stan, okay? And again, this is, you know, when Rob writes in from Minnesota or Diane writes from Kansas or I tell my own little bizarre story, you know, this is not something that's been ginned up by the right wing. These are actual experiences of actual, real, progressive human beings who are running into the tender mercies of this system, which all along was designed not, it was, you know, it's kind of like for-profit media broadcasting. For-profit media broadcasting is not designed to deliver programming to a viewer or a listener. It is designed to deliver those listeners or viewers into the hands of advertisers so that they might make potential purchases. This is the same thing. The Affordable Care Act, it turns out, is not designed to deliver health care to individuals. It is designed to deliver individuals into the tender mercies of the for-profit health insurance industry with a whopping helping of welfare, corporate welfare, to go with it. So this is what Diane writes. Just check this out. I don't want to complain, she says, since I have a good income, tenure, and university-provided health care insurance. Even though I have this good health care insurance, including dental and vision care, I've always put the maximum allowed by the federal government aside, before taxes, into a cafeteria plan, a flexible fund, it's called, According to this plan, which is audited by the IRS, I can pay for supplements and alternative health care aimed at preventative care, including massage and acupuncture. I can also cover any expenses or deductibles not covered by my Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance. And remember, this is my own money. The advantage is that my contributions are deducted before taxes. And that makes a big deal. That's a big deal. Okay. Well, Diane says, my university HR department has told me that starting in January 2014, the amount I can put in this fund is now $1,000 less than it was last year and in all prior years. I was told by our university HR specialist that this charge is a result of the Affordable Care Act. I called the governor's office and was told the same thing. Please do not misunderstand me, Diane reasserts. I realize that I'm very lucky in having the health care coverage that I do. I don't think it's a matter of luck at all, Jim. I think it's a matter of hard work. But anyway, Diane says, still, the ACA has somehow managed to leave me worse off. Sigh. I was for the public choice option. After that wasn't possible, I saw the situation morph into a complex, incomprehensible system, apparently robbing Peter to pay Paul. Again, I'm not complaining. It's just that I suspect that we are only beginning to see what we might be in for.
Well, you know, the first thing that is going to be hit will be federal employees. The second thing is that will be hit will be state employees, regardless of wherever they are, and however secure and sane their and fair their programs are. It'll filter down to them too. I have a friend in California who's they have, instead of Medicare, they have what they call what's the name of it? Not CalMed, but Medi-Cal.
Yeah.
That's what they have in California. And I can be rest assured, and I told my friend, I said, you can be rest assured that they're going to be nipping at the heels of that. And she already told me, she said, yeah, she said, I've retired now, but the people who are coming on after I did don't have nearly what I had as far as benefits and things of that nature. And she was lucky to carry that into retirement. And, you know, I'm not complaining either. I'm lucky to have had what I have carried into retirement. But nonetheless, I'm sure they're going to, after the first of the year, they're going to be trying to, through the sequester or whatever, in the aims of balancing a budget, trying to do it on the backs of the people who can afford at least in any way to support that burden. That's just the unfair thing. And right now, I'll tell you, the ACA is really taking a beating as far as popularity is concerned. I think it's, what, 65 versus 35 now?
Right, and I don't think that that's an accident.
Well, no. I mean, you've got a lot of people up there who basically...
Do you remember how they bragged, Jim?
They're throwing shoes into the machinery.
No. Well, yeah, but remember how they bragged on the way out? I think it was Count Dicula himself who bragged that they were leaving moles or little splinter cells down inside the government from the W administration. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you think maybe they've gone active?
Well, it could be.
And that's about as paranoid as I think I've ever gotten on this program in all these years.
I think there's probably a lot of influence among those people who were either, I guess they were Bush appointees, but then they got, you know, they were transitioned to, you know, career service, and, you know, that's how they do it with the RAND-SPEC appointment. Nonetheless, you know, I'm sure there are a number of those people left around to see what they can do, and they may covertly say to a contractor or whoever has been given the responsibility of making this ACA work, well, make it not work and make it as difficult as you possibly can.
While at the same time making sure that the maximum amount of federal money goes into the pockets of the for-profit insurance industry, which profits by the agony, misery, illness, and death of us.
Well, that's the thing about this ACA. It is a boom.
Man, that capitalism something when you got some serious socialism behind it, doesn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is really a boom for the insurance companies. It is. I mean, it's talk about a cash cow for them. I mean, that's what they're going to use it as. And that's what it's being used as. I mean, in your situation, you haven't been able to qualify yet, or you have?
Well, I'm told I have. I was told on the phone that I have, that the kids qualify for Medicaid, and Agnes and I are going to be thrown to the tender mercies of the for-profit insurance industry.
Okay. Medicaid will last, not necessarily for you, but for how long? I mean, for your children?
For the foreseeable future.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years, at least.
Now, with Medicaid, I'm not sure how that works.
It's single-payer health care. Present your card, get treatment. No copays, no deductibles, no nothing.
Okay.
As long as you meet the 138% of the income threshold requirement, which I think that was the only way this guy on the phone could make it work was to show income that wasn't there. It was quite interesting. Hey, Jim, I got a couple behind you, so I'm gonna move on. But you have a good evening, and maybe we'll be talking a little bit tomorrow evening.
Oh, let's hope so. Take care. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care, Jim.
Bye.
Bye now. And we'll keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, is this Todd?
Yes, it certainly is.
Okay, we've talked a couple of times, and I've got your... I can recognize voices.
Ah, good for you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, last time we talked, we were talking about the website for the ACA, and you asked me to dig in and do a little bit of looking around on that and how it was programmed and report back to you. Well, I'm calling to report back to you.
Okie dokie. I can't wait to hear this.
Well, it's ugly. It's really, really ugly. I took a look, and I didn't dig too deeply, but I took a look at some of the source code on the pages, and if anybody...
I mean, what's it written in? Fortran? COBOL? Abacus? What?
Ancient Aramaic, perhaps. I'm
Reformed
not sure.
Egyptian?
I forget what the heck they call that, but now actually it looks like it's a whole conglomeration of things. There's some JavaScript in there. Looks like the main code might be PHP. There's Java and JavaScript, it looks like. So, yeah, it's a whole big cluster of things, which isn't necessarily unusual, but it looks like it was a whole bunch of overkill and... designed by committee, I would...
where I was going to go next. Looked like it was designed by committee who were designing it while they were trying to figure out, by committee again, where to go for lunch.
Right, yes, exactly. And it was really weird because looking through there is still debugging code that was put in there to see what was going on. Debugging code that's in there that's being published when you take a look at the web page. It's actually in there. It's commented out, but if you look at the source code, you can see where they went through and whoever it is traced through it and tried to figure out what happened or what was going on when it was originally written. So, yeah, it's a mess. I'm really surprised that it works at all. So if you managed to get through it and all these people were, you and all the rest of the people managed to get signed up through it, I'm really impressed because it's an ugly, ugly mess.
I'm not sure that I got through it the right way, but yeah.
Well, if you made it to the end, I guess that's all that matters, isn't it?
Well... Yeah. But no, Todd, I don't know, because ever since they said congratulations, I haven't been able to get in to get the message telling me, because now I have to look at my appeal rights, because there is no way that Agnes and I should not qualify for the expanded Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that if possible, not because I'm too cheap to pay for insurance, but because we can't, and B, because I believe in universal, in some degree of single-payer health care.
Sums up on that. Yeah, I mean, we, Kath and I are kind of going through the same thing, in that this isn't even related to the ACA. I mean, she had her disability approved, and was told that she was eligible for Medicaid, and it turns out that with the money that she is getting from the disability settlement, she has over $1,200 a month pay down before Medicaid will start kicking anything in. So, you know, what good is having any sort of insurance when you've got a pay down that's, you know, what, the equivalent of a $150,000, $200,000 a month mortgage payment? We can't do that either. So, you know, you're stuck out there flapping in the wind regardless, I guess.
Yeah. And I wish, and it, I mean, it just beat the dickens out of me, Todd, the physical act of trying to get through the online sign-up, because you would get to the very end, and I'd gotten to the very end, like, I think 3-4 times. And it kicks you over to this, you know, you'll be signed up, and it tells you to enter your electronic signature, okay, click send, done, and it kicks you to this verification page, and there's nothing there that says submit, continue, have a nice day, kiss my butt, you know, congratulations, you're a winner, nothing. And when I finally got through after my 45-minute hold time, the guy said, "Oh, no, you should have received a message and known pretty clear." Well, no, I didn't get nothing. No.
Uh-oh. And they couldn't confirm it while talking on the phone with them. They had no way of going through their records saying that yes or no?
No, the only thing he could do was go through and fill out the application for me again.
So the people that were helping you out on the phone when you called them in, they were just essentially taking the information, asking you the questions from the website, and filling it in on their computer rather than you filling it in on your computer.
Right.
Ah.
Because he was asking me the same. I mean, and I said to him, "Are you just filling this out again?" Well, yeah.
Well,
I said, that's not my point. I've got a pending application. Well, this is all I can do.
Probably have two.
And right after he said, this is all I can do, he told, congratulations, you and your wife have been thrown to the tender mercies of the for-profit insurance industry.
Just out of curiosity, did you notice how many insurance companies are available down in West Virginia?
I have no idea, Todd, because, you know, it's supposed to give you an answer and then bump you over to that. But like I said, I got to that page where it was, you know, your profile has been verified, and there's no way to go anywhere from there. I mean, it was just a locked room as far as web pages go.
Wow.
No back button, no forward, no, you know, fall back
well,
in
maybe,
it, nothing.
Maybe they just hadn't gotten that far in the processing.
Once he did whatever it was he needed to do to throw me and Agnes to the tender mercies of the for-profit insurance industry, it worked. And he said, now, you know, you can sign back in, you can log back in a couple hours after the thing goes, you know, becomes finalized, and then you can go through the appeal process. Oh, joy. You mean there's an appeal process webpage too? I can't wait for that.
Well, Kathy was snooping around for us, and we've got to go through, and we haven't managed to get signed up by the deadline yet. There is 42 companies that we can choose from in Ohio. How in the hell do you go through and make a comparison of 42 companies to pick from?
I think you probably start out with cost and deductible, and you know that the lower the cost is, the higher the deductible is going to be, but for anybody who is over 16, a high deductible. Well, okay, probably a little higher than that. But high deductibles are like not having any insurance at all. So basically you're paying the for-profit insurance industry to say that you have a policy, but in point of fact, the policy means nothing until you've ponied up $1,000 that you didn't have in the first place.
That sounds about right. Yep.
On the other hand, I keep comparing that to the idea of a health insurance program that you're signed up for the day that you're born, and then you've got health care.
Right.
I mean, I will never forget.
And you're good.
I will never forget the day that I was at that shareholder meeting in Germany, and you know that the little Belgian bastard had stolen all my backpack with my laptop and my meds in it, and I told him, you know, and they were being genial, and you know the way the Germans are, they said, well, we must take care of this as soon as we are done here, and they did. And they took me in there, the doctor, and the doctor was on site at the shareholder meeting, took my blood pressure, said, it does appear to be a bit high. They should probably hurry up and get your medicine. So some of my friends then took me, and meanwhile, while the company doc there is checking me out, she says, you're American, no? And I said, yes. And she said, why does your country approach healthcare in such a barbaric fashion? And she wasn't being mean, Todd.
Right. It's an accurate description, isn't it?
It absolutely is. So here's how that worked out for those, you know, for those who may have missed this part of the program a year and a half ago. We got on a train. We went into the middle of Frankfurt. We went to the walk-in clinic. Went in there. I paid $10 and sat down with a very genial physician who told me how he hated, you know, that I'd been ripped off, mugged, whatever, and that, you know, obviously everyone needs to have their medication. And he said, tell me what they are. And I did. And he said, this is not a problem. He writes me the prescriptions. He tells me how much each one is going to be. It doesn't matter what pharmacy I take it to in the entire nation of Germany.
Wow.
And I replaced all my prescriptions for less than $20. Less than $50. For a month. Jesus, it was a 90-day supply. Replaced it all for $50. And a $10 office call. And that was, you know, that was healthcare. And I walked away from, you know, and I was having terrible troubles from the gallbladder back then. And I think it was Sandra who said, I mean, I'm not saying anything or anything, but what a lovely time to have a gallbladder attack and have to have your gallbladder out over there. Bob, just saying,
If it works out that way, you just have to roll with it.
Unfortunately, you know, I wound up being about as relaxed as one human being can be, and had a magnificent experience. Every experience I had there was just tremendous. Stuff works over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it does because there is a determination that it will work. And the way we approach healthcare here, Todd, is barbaric. I mean, it is the essence of barbarism that we would put the profits of the industry that delivers the health insurance ahead of the well-being of the people that they nominally insure.
Right.
And the fact that there are $1,000 and $2,000 and $6,000 deductibles out there just proves it.
Right. Kathy and I, when this whole ACA, last summer, two summers ago, when they were having the meetings with all the uproars in it, went to a meeting with Marsha Fudge, our representative, and there was somebody out front, and we got into a discussion with this, I think he was somebody from the healthcare industry, although he didn't advertise himself as such, and I just asked him a question of, you know, why should health, as somebody's life and death, be a commodity? rather than, you know, a right. It's a commodity for somebody to make a money on, a profit on, just, you know, the health of a person. That just, you described it, it sounds so barbaric. You know, it is so barbaric.
It's like blood sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might as well just bring the leeches out and have a good bloodletting.
Good and good for you.
Right. So, so I just wanted to give you a buzz and let you know that, it's really ugly and surprised at all that it worked. And
Let me ask you this, since we try to not just bitch about things without then suggesting a solution. Based on what you saw, Todd, and given your years of experience and expertise, could that website have been built sanely?
Yes, of course it could. And I don't mean that being said, you know, egotistically or anything else, but yes, absolutely. It certainly could have been. If it was done right by a competent firm. But, we had the previous discussion. Once the initial framework is laid down, you got the choice of, you know, when you bring in a second organization or whatever to try and fix it, you got two choices. You can scrap the entire thing and start from scratch from the design process up and then start your coding, which is a really, really lengthy process, or you can go through and try and find every place it's broken and put Band-Aids on it.
Okay, so
let me
just ask you this, Todd. From the ground up, how much time did the most complex piece of coding you ever worked on take? You don't have to tell you to say what it was or if it was a web, whatever. You don't have to say, but just for an idea.
Well, I was working with a team of two. I worked on the middleware, which took the information. Another guy worked on the front end, or what was displayed to the user, the website. And I took the data that was collected from there and did the sorting, the processing on it, and calculations and everything else that needed to be stored or retrieved from the database, do the conversions, and, you know, give it back to the website for it to be displayed. The longest process that I was involved in was 9 months. And at that point, the project got pulled. So after 9 months of work with two people, they just decided, nope, that's not going to happen anymore. You're off the project. And it wasn't because of lack of work. They just shifted the focus.
Okay, so you took a decent little jaunt around the healthcare.gov website, Todd. How long, and we understand you're speculating because you weren't on the inside, how long should that boondoggle have taken to build?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that. I don't know the complexity of it and how many different permutations that each answer that you put in there may have brought up. I know the path that it's kind of like following a family tree or following a tree. You make a decision, that decision will send you either this way or that way. And sometimes there's more than two. And, okay, so it sends you up this branch, and you make another decision, and it sends you this way. I don't know of all the possible permutations that those decisions could have made. I can't answer that, to be real honest with you. I don't know.
Okay,
I can say that it's a really, really complex complex piece of code.
Okay, let me put it.
How? I don't know.
Let me put it this way. Maybe we can drill down at least a little bit further. And I'm not trying to be unfair, and I'm not trying to put you on a spot. I hope you understand.
Sure.
The Affordable Care Act was passed 3.5-4 years ago. Is 3.5 to 4 years enough time to get it right?
Yes. But I will say that with a little caveat, is that every time that Congress or anybody else starts talking about, no, we're going to change it. No, we want to change this part. We want to repeal this part. We're going to repeal it. It could very well be that somebody just came along and said, oh, okay, hold off on it because we're not sure where it's going to go from here. Don't do anything yet. Oh, wait a minute. Don't do anything yet. This is only the 30th time they've tried to repeal it. There may be more. So they may not have had that full run of actual working. It could have been tied up with somebody just saying, no, don't put any effort into it yet.
The reason I'm asking these questions, I wonder if they just sat on their hands until the ACA ruling came down from the Supreme Court, which would have meant they would have had 14 months to get it done.
That's entirely possible, and it should have been able to be completed within 14 months by a competent company with competent programmers. Yes, it could have been done in that length of time.
Okay. Well, Todd, I really appreciate it. It can't have been fun wandering around in that, but...
Well, it kind of was, just to see what was happening, and I got to the area where it gave you the suffixes of... possibilities of entries, yeah, and then lo and behold, there was no second. And
yeah, so you saw my senior, junior, IV?
I certainly did.
Yeah, oddly enough, I got around that. I changed it to just putting the II after his last name in the last name box, and that way we still came up with a name that actually matched his Social Security card.
Cool.
And just breezed on through all of it until I got to the electronic signature verification, typed my name in, hit send, boom, and then it kicks me to that one page, and then you get out of it, and it says your application is incomplete. And there was no way to complete it. There was no way to go anywhere and complete it. No instructions, no clues. I mean, even a really, I can remember how difficult, remember back in the 90s when Myst came out? Remember that video game?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the coolest video game ever made because nobody got shot, nobody got bombed. In fact, there was very little of anything going on. It was just a giant organic embedded puzzle series. But it was so engaging, it sucked you into that whole world. But at least you knew that if you stood around and wandered around long enough and used a little bit of intuition and a little bit more deduction, you would get to the next stage. Not so with this.
Nope, absolutely. And I hate to say it, but, you know, with all the, we talked about earlier, all the permutations of what your answer could be to a question as to what route it took you. You may have been left out there on the leaf of a limb and somebody didn't make it out there or follow it through to figure out, you know, say, oh, this has got to loop back around here.
But oddly enough, I got to the point where that didn't matter. I got all the way through. I answered all the questions about everybody on the application, kicked me to the next thing. Did you see is it green or blue? The button after you click a dot in a field, it says save and continue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got all the way through all of that, all the way down through the income information, all the way to the electronic signature verification. And then it sends up this screen that says, verified, and nothing. I mean, it's just nuts.
Yep.
Well, Todd, I appreciate it, and hopefully we will talk again soon. Thank you again. Hey to Kathy.
Okay.
Yeah, I see that she's listening with headphones on, so she said the delay between you talking and me talking back was making her brain a little busy, so we'll give her brain a break now.
Oh, okay, that works. And can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Your rant, I think it was not this past Friday, but two Fridays ago, about John Stewart in West Virginia, I can really understand how that could be taken personal. but may I please advise you to try and not to take that quite so personal? And I know I'm rubbing a really raw injury or a raw sore with that with some salt. But, you know, as Bill and Thomas and Kathy and I can attest, you know, at least you're not living in Cleveland. My God, we've been the butt of jokes since, you know, what, the last 50 years? And with the river that caught on fire and all the pollution and the heavy metals and the fish that we caught that they can't eat anymore because it's all poisoned, and the sewage overruns and dump right into the beaches where the kids play and everything else. Yeah, it's a joke. Like I say, you can take it personal, but man, life's too short to do that. You just gotta kind of let it roll off your back.
I get that.
But I can sympathize, but hey, at least you're not Cleveland.
now your fellow Clevelanders are going to be mad at you. So.
Oh no, they know what they've taken the beating along with us, absolutely. And you know, it like talking about the Browns. Hey, there's always next year.
And next year, and next year, and next year. You're the NFL's preseason game. Yeah, you're the NFL's answer to the Cubs now, aren't you?
I think so, and the butt of their jokes too. So at least you're not Cleveland.
Hey Todd, you have a good. You and Kathy have a good holiday, and we will talk soon.
All right, you take care, buddy, and can't wait to hear from tomorrow night. You guys have good holidays. I'll talk at you soon.
All right, bye now.
Bye now.
Todd with Kathy in the background and calling from, obviously, Cleveland. Jack, you're going right back to the phones here in a second. Time running away from us again. Jack writing from Shreveport, subject line, healthcare being barbaric. We've got to remember that there is not just nonfeasance going on, but there is a very effective effort going on to actively make things such as the ACA and its interfaces not work. It's not just incompetence. And although I hate to use the word, I think it's evil. It seems there is no way that this can happen without people knowingly hurting other people. P.S. Recall my previous email that said if Heritage did the plan, John Roberts would have known about the Medicaid runaround ahead of time. I feel better having read that coming from Jack, because A, Jack is pretty sane, and B, well, it's nice not to feel all alone in one's feeling of conviction that something, as Hamlet said, is rotten in the state of Denmark. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark calling from Florida.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Bob, I've never told you, but I'm of Denmark heritage.
Then you get it.
Something rotten in Denmark.
Yeah, I think it's probably a fish dish that's served about this time of year. No, wait, that's Norway. Close enough for government work, right?
Apparently, having been both places for a very short period of time, the Denmark people could give a damn about all of us Marines trouncing around their city, and that was fine with me. I actually felt out of place because we were in what the Army calls your BDUs, your battle dress uniforms. The Marine Corps used to just call it your camouflage uniform or your camis or the patines. But you know, in Norway they were very pro all adulating, and I thought they're a little bit over the top. And but in any case, I'm not Danish. I'm probably German and English. I just wanted by heritage and maybe part Indian, but I like a lot of Southern folks, and I just wanted. Called the show originally. I heard Bill's voice. I felt very glad, like anybody else, and inspired to hear Bill back in the air. I just wanted Bill to know that I was trying to tell Bill this before he had his bump in the road, that he doesn't need to study war no more. And in speaking of heritage and parts of our country, whether Scottish or German or whatever we are, there comes a nature with, especially some of those groups, to have a fighting spirit. And I think, being a Dirksen from Illinois, and being German and being a big athletic guy, that I'm very competitive. And Bill is of German heritage to some degree, And it's in his nature to be a fighter, but I would ask Bill as a friend to stop fighting to fight and fight for himself, for his, for the love that he's actually given back to many of the listeners on the, on your show, Bob, and also in his life through his music. And I think he has peace in his heart. And I want him to know, as a paid professional fighter and a warrior, that, he's okay. He doesn't need to fight. And to know that, we warriors care about him. So, I just wanted to say another thing. I'm about your age, Bob, just a couple years on you. It doesn't give me any more or less wisdom. But I would say that I am old enough to have witnessed Jack Ruby shoot Lee Harvey Oswald. And I am barely bright enough to know that when it comes to computer information, what I understand, listening to electricians talk or different people, that apparently, from what I've read a little bit, because it's been so trounced in the corporate-controlled media that I just almost have to stay away from it, but that trains of information are like highways and pipelines, and they can be intercepted. And so I'm going to use a word that no one's used tonight, and it's called sabotage. And I don't give a damn. You know, we have a way to shut down a component in a power plant through satellites on the opposite side of the world if we want, and it leaves no fingerprints, and it can be done to us. And so there's a lot of money on the table, and people have been killed for a lot less in this country and around the world. We've toppled governments for the denationalization of oil. I just watched Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, having read the overthrow of Mossadegh myself 20, 30 years ago. But I watched the documentary with some people talking about Kermit Roosevelt. So I don't put anything past the corporate interests of this country. And I don't give a damn who hears that. And, you know, and I've often said, call my wife and I'll hang up after this, Bob, but I'll be on the phone and she'll put me on hold for a second. She's in a business where, you know, it's back and forth. So, Mark, let me put you on hold. And she'll come back and she'll go, who were you talking to? And I said, well, Chris, I was talking to whoever's listening. She'll go, Mark, we don't have to do that. And I said, well, I hear the beeping. And and it's no bullshit, as Marines would say, no bullshit, GI, because on 60 Minutes last weekend, what I would do, I would have an imaginary conversation, whoever was eavesdropping. I'd say, well, I'll just let you know that you're spying on an honorably discharged U.S. Marine veteran who served his country, has had Marines die in his hands. And you're spying on me, and you're in uniform, and you're an E3. And you're getting paid E3 pay, but the government, the taxpayers, are getting charged at the rate of a civilian. And that gets back to your David K. Johnston story earlier tonight. And, of course, any E3 would know that, but on 60 Minutes they show all the young jackasses with the IQs of a space shuttle pilot that work for the NSA, and that's who they use, are young, brilliant kids, and they don't know what they're doing. They're just pushing buttons. But whoever's listening to me, I could give a damn. I have nuts of steel, but I also have a lot of love in my heart. But I can also shoot a distinguished expert in the Marine Corps with a handgun. So I could give a shit, in the FBI course as a young police cadet. But I could give a shit about all that.
Well, you know, one of the things we found out, Mark, very early on, because our dear friend Peter Godbold was and is a network specialist. He calls himself a generalist, but this guy knows stuff that this guy's forgotten stuff that most people will never know about networking. He identified for us in the very earliest days of the Horn the fact that we were getting pinged on an otherwise unused port. We were getting pinged by the Department of Defense or a Department of Defense contractor on a nightly basis every time we hotted up the mic here.
Now, was that, Bob, would that be because of proximity to where you are in West Virginia, you think it, or that...
No, it's because of what we do. Back then, we were probably... We were probably deemed something nasty because we were liberal, we were progressive, and we were ferociously anti-Bush.
Well, and of course, and then you, that four-letter adjective right there ties right back into Booz Allen Hamilton, and it all goes back to total information awareness. It's all for corporate control. You know, people can sell a lot of red, white, and blue. And I just want to say to our buddy in Alabama, who we both love and admire, he's a very, very bright guy and a fellow veteran, and he knows that I care about him, but I would just say for the poor Americans that wore a uniform or civilians that are having their benefits cut, as a veteran, I could give a shit, and I'm sorry about that. this whole country is hurting. And for the majority of people that wore a uniform, that served in our government, did not necessarily walk in harm's way. Did they think that they were going to get something 30, 40, or 50, or 20 years ago, or 10 years ago? Sure they did, and so did I. But you know what? If we don't take care of all of us, none of us are going to be taken care of, and nobody's more important. And I'll also say this about that group of that block of voters. This politics is life and death, and it's war. And they know that a majority, I won't say a majority, but there's a high percentage of people in that group of people that do not support us Democrats who care about war and peace. And they can kiss my ass. And so if they've lost benefits, sorry about your bad luck, Charlie. And that's coming from a veteran that volunteered for Beirut in 1977, 78. So knowing that it was dangerous. So they can kiss my ass. And I don't mean personally to anybody, but what I'm saying is, we need to all pull together. If we're really American, healthcare is American. The ACA Act is America. It's not about a group of people having it and not the other. That's America, folks.
Yeah, it is. And the fact of the matter is, it has been, I think Jack in Shreveport is right, Mark. There have been, you know, the efforts to undermine the ACA have not just been in the House of Representatives and among a few weirdo Republicans in the Senate. There is something going on underneath all of this. Can't prove it, can't point to it, except for, you know, a couple of little stories here and there. But this is, you can't make something as screwed up as this website and be trying to do a good job at it. You can't do it. It cannot be done. This thing,
well, and I,
this,
yeah.
this thing, no, you used the right word. Jim referenced earlier, he said people are throwing shoes into the machinery. Well, you know, the word sabotage comes from the sabots, which were the shoes that Frenchmen would throw into the machinery to make the thing shut down.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, to throw shoes into the machinery is sabotage.
Well, yeah. Isn't that interesting? And that's where we leave George Bush Jr. As a war protester, Veterans for Peace. Bush got some shoes thrown at him, I think, and I thought that was any case, Bob. I'm with you, brother.
All right, Mark, you have yourself a good evening. Thank you so very much.
Yep, Semper Fi, and tell your son hello.
All right, will do. Take care. Bye now. And that's our buddy Mark. And it's time to get out of here. Really time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who jumped in to get yourself a Palmand treat this evening. All three tins are gone. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoy them. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch. We'll be back here for Christmas Eve tomorrow evening. Rick Smith is next. Thanks, everybody. Good night.